You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings. Why are you listening to this show? The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Casual attempted murder to open Armageddon. Right? He tries to shoot at Ben Affleck on an oil rig.
Yeah.
Which you shouldn't be able to
have a gun on,
have
an,
a
oil
gun
rig.
On an oil
yeah.
rig. It's problematic. But he tries to murder.
Idea.
He tries to murder Ben Affleck.
There is an article that came out in EW, this is how old this is, about Armageddon and about how Michael Bay was a perfectionist. And he was like trying, they described how he was like, he really wanted to get the sound correct of the guys walking around on the asteroid. And he was had taken, like he had bought like 100,000 pounds of like Captain Crunch cereal, and the props people and the set deck people were spreading it out over the set. So, and he was like testing it and having people like step on it and listen. And again, there it's a vacuum. There's no sound. Space. It would make no sound at all. And it was like, so the article began with him talking about how he's a perfectionist and then describing something that made no sense. And that pretty much, I think, sums up the entire movie. It's not a good film. And Deep Impact, by the way, Deep Impact's pretty good. Deep Impact, I like it had something, there was like people in that movie reflect upon what's happening to the in the world in a way that they do not in Armageddon. There is no reflection or deeper thought or meaning to Armageddon.
Right.
And at least in Deep Impact, there were people who were trying to figure out what it all meant.
Right. But Armageddon is actually closer to how we'd handle things in 2022.
No, it's not.
Yes, it
is. No, it's not at all.
Yeah, it is.
You think they would send a bunch of oil rig drillers to
yes,
the asteroid?
Specifically like, Bruce Willis and Michael Clark Duncan and like that, like a ragtag.
In his current state.
And Steve Buscemi.
And Steve Buscemi, yeah.
His current state is in
both of their current states. Him and Bruce.
We not too long ago had a president tell us to bleach our assholes to avoid COVID-19. I'm not really sure
he
if you've
said,
the last few years.
He said drink the bleach. He didn't say bleach your asshole.
It's close to what he said, yeah.
This he guy. Did look at an eclipse, though.
Still, my yeah. favorite.
Yeah.
My favorite.
I could just see him looking up at the sun as Steve Buscemi flies to save us all.
Start of the day, it is the start of the day. Start of the day, it is the start of the day. Start of the day, it is the start of the day. Start of the day, it is the start of the day.
This is courtesy of @StatMuse on Twitter. Russell Westbrook has more career triple-doubles than the Grizzlies, Jazz, Raptors, Hornets, Magic, and Timberwolves combined.
Since he's been in the league or ever?
ever. Those franchises in their entire history. I mean, those aren't old franchises.
I know,
if you think about it. But
I mean, 30 years in some cases. 30 plus years.
Isn't that wild?
That's incredible. Triple doubles, overrated.
Overrated.
Oh.
Kind of pointless.
Properly rated.
That's not how this
who
game works.
Properly rated. Underrated.
I mean, who is the guy who was one rebound shy of a triple double and he threw the he in,
Ricky
he
Davis.
The ball
Ricky
and
Davis.
He threw,
Ricky Davis. Shout out his own basket.
That ruled. That was the best. That's not a rebound, right?
He didn't get credited, and people got upset that he did it. What I love is that people got upset.
If you have,
who cares?
If you have 13 assists, but you have like 9 rebounds, you should be able to take away one assist and put it in the rebound column.
Does it work the other way?
After the game, you can move your statistics around any way you want. But it should be like 3 points is one rebound, you know. Like you have to, there should be a conversion rate.
I do have a hot take when it comes to assists. That if you assist a player that gets fouled and goes to the line, you should be able to get assist credit.
Half an assist, right? Yeah. Like a half.
Yeah, I've always thought that if you assist a guy and he gets hammered and then he hits both free throws, you get the assist. So that you're relying on him to sink both. It's only if he hits both.
So
free
throws. You're relying on them regardless.
Wait, if he makes one, misses one, you get nothing.
Oh, okay.
No, you get nothing.
Well, I think either way, that's an improvement on what we have.
I'll tell you why I like that. I like it because it puts like an element of peer pressure, like beyond you wanting to score as many points as possible as an individual and want to do best for the team. From a game perspective, you also have a specific person who's like, you better not mess this up.
Also, hockey assists need to count in more sports than just hockey. Need to count in soccer, certainly soccer, because counters, like the most essential pass, happens like 5 before the actual assist.
In MLS, they count secondary assists, and most people around the world absolutely despise it.
You want to hear something? As a soccer enthusiast from birth until 2004... the idea of counting assists in soccer disgusts me. It's an American invention. Mm. You play the game, and things happen, and people score. You're not going to be like, oh, well, I'm actually responsible for passing the most to people. Because a lot of times it's not that amazing of an assist.
No, the pass that leads to the pass is almost often the most important pass.
I think there should be a committee. It should be like we look at the entire move, and whoever had the most important pass in the move gets the assist.
I agree.
It could be like a scorer.
That really works for college football, having a committee who decides everything.
I know it's subjective, but it feels a little nonsensical. Like with all the ball movement in the NBA today, hockey assists should count, I think.
As assists or should have its
like
own?
If you watch
it. You can look it up. We know who has secondary assists.
Right, but the players don't. Like.
They don't care. No.
Yeah, they care about like. Well,
and also it doesn't contribute to their salaries.
Right.
And how would you?
Like Boris Diaw.
Oh,
yeah. Like, he's like the fat lever of hockey assists.
He was a maestro. One more. Swing, as they call it.
Yeah, Boris Diaw's probably one of the greatest assist men ever in our NBA.
Secondary assist men.
The fat lever.
Don't sleep on him. He had 20 assists like multiple times, right?
Yeah, fat lever, stat stuffer. But also, Boris Diaw's fat lever. Like, I kind of like it.
Fat liver.
That is a rich liver.
Jokes.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye, everybody.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
I did not propose in a hot air balloon, but I did go on a hot air balloon trip, a ride in San Francisco, Northern California. On my honeymoon, we got stuck in a tree. And I haven't been back since. I mean, to the entire area, by the way.
Stugatz!
You just avoided the entire, yes. Not just the tree, yeah. Not just hot air balloons. You've avoided the entire West Coast.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
We're not here to talk to you about more than 400 catches, nearly 5,000 yards. We're not here to talk to you about any of the touchdowns. We are here to talk to you about all 8 of the passes. We believe you to be the best statistical passer in the history of the league. And yeah. So we want to know what your memory is on these passes. Can we chronicle them one at a time?
Yeah, we could do that.
All right, so the first pass. What do you remember about the first pass you threw in the NFL?
Well, during the week, my arm was killing me the whole time. So I wasn't sure how it was going to be when the game call was coming. But I told Coach, like, call it, like.
Wait, your arm was killing you because of football or like practicing this?
No idea. No, we haven't practiced it. Right. We practiced like maybe once or twice.
Really?
Yeah.
Like but your arm was sore?
My arm was sore, okay. Yeah. Like I had no idea why. And it was just, I was like, the one time we did it in practice, like I didn't really throw far. My like, arm was sore shit. So I was like, it didn't look great. So I wasn't sure they would call it. Coach was like, we're going to call it the first play. I was like, go ahead.
First play of the game.
Mm-hmm. I was like, go ahead.
You said go ahead?
Yeah.
But you knew that you were.
He's a world-class athlete.
Well, I mean, yeah. No, because Brady, Manning, Sanu. I mean, you got at least one set on them in terms of quarterback ratings.
So. I mean, I do. Yeah. I'm perfect. I'm 1-0 as a starter.
That's right. You got it.
Counts as a start.
So because you threw the first pass of the game, it counts as a start. What do you remember about the first pass? Because your arm hurt, but it wasn't a short touchdown pass.
Well, I knew like at the game I was fine. Like I was like throwing a bunch before the game. Like usually I don't throw as much. Like we'll play catch and stuff like that. We usually run routes before the game, but I was actually throwing a lot, like back and forth. Like whoever caught the ball, I was like, let me throw it back for you guys, just to get it loose and it fill it.
So this was a scripted play.
Yeah, it was the first play.
You knew that.
We all knew
the first time. You had time to know that this was.
Yeah. Did you
know
it was going to
work? Did you know it was going to work?
Oh, for sure. As soon as I knew they were going to do their cover zero check, because I was waiting for London Fletcher to do it to check cover zero. And it took him a minute to do it at first. I'm just like, man, I looked at the play clock. I'm like, I got time. Like, because I didn't want to run the ball. I obviously want to throw it. So I was like, I'm
going to
take my time. Yeah,
I'm going to take my time.
So I waited for him, and he made the check. And I saw it was AJ versus safety. I saw the D'Angelo Hall was trying to switch with the safety. But the safety is like, I got it. They're like, they're about to run the ball. And I was like, oh, great. That's even better.
Wow, your eyes got big on D'Angelo Hall.
No, I was just like, oh, all right. Well, we'll keep it at that. And then I just let it fly. And AJ ran around under it.
73-yard touchdown pass to AJ Green. What about the second one? What do you remember about your second pass?
Which one was the second one?
It was in a game against the Browns.
Oh, in the rain. I was like, we had it in all week. I threw it a few times, but I didn't know if coach was going to call it because of the weather. But he was like, I think it was drizzling a little bit. And I had my rain gloves on. He's like, can you throw a rain gloves? I'm like, I could throw in anything. Like, what are you talking about?
What's the matter with
like,
you?
Yeah, like, because, you know, it's just one of those things. I have confidence in my throwing ability. So I was just like, yeah. Like, so I was like, all right, coach. And he called it. And I just saw Gio was, I think it was, what was the linebacker's name that was chasing him down?
Giovanni Bernard was the running back. Yeah, you mentioned Gio, right.
But I forgot who the linebacker was. But it was Barkevious Mingo. It was a taller guy.
That guy's not going to keep up with Bernard.
I was just like, I mean, that's my best op right there. So I just let it fly, like, no hesitation. And I was like, I hope he tracks it well, because it's like, it's a tough catch for a running back over my shoulder. and he tracked that thing like he like done it before, and I was like, hey,
oh, it's a perfect pass.
Yeah, you put it right where you had to.
Yeah, I know other
the great
choice.
Ones too.
Right?
The third one against Atlanta. What do you remember?
Oh, the end around. I just knew I was gonna let it fly no matter what. Like, I saw it was at safety.
It seems to be a recurring theme.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So you have run pass options on all of these, but
I knew it was a pass. Yeah. Like, it was a pass. It was like, if you got the one on one, like, B Tate was one on one at the corner, and I knew the safety wouldn't get over there in time. So I trust B Tate versus the corner any day. All you gotta do is just give him a chance. So I put it where he can track it and get to it. And the cool part was, is like, it wasn't, I feel like that was one of the hardest throws I had, just because of I'm running kind of fast to the right and had to stop and let it go.
50-yard pass to Brandon Tate. Why didn't he score? He didn't score. It wasn't a touchdown pass.
Well, because the safety tracked him as soon as he caught it and made to tackle out of bounds.
Had an angle.
So nothing to do with you. It was all Tate and the safety, yeah. Right?
But the safety's further back because at this point the book is out. Mm-hmm. It's a new consling.
Yes, yeah. you got to play him back here. Yeah. This fourth one, they're going to like who this fourth one is too. What do you remember about the fourth one?
You already have a smile.
He said
right
yes. He just said to Andy under his breath.
Red Rifle.
It's funny because, I mean, the person he caught it on was my homeboy, Bleedy Ray Wilson. So it's like, when I first, like, we practiced it a bunch of times that week, actually, and coach was like, you just catch it, just sell, run right, throw it back left. Like, nobody's going to be with Andy. I'm sitting there, I'm like, are y'all serious? Even, like, first quarter, just like, yeah, it'll work. I'm like, safety's not going to move. Like, like, he may be back there. So I was like, all right. So I did it, and I'm looking to see, I'm like, the safety's over here. I'm looking to see if there's anybody else when I'm getting ready to throw. And when I let it go, I saw the corner, like, break in the middle of, like, between Whitworth and whoever the guard. I think it was
he was breaking on your route. He was breaking,
he was breaking on
the ball. He was breaking on Dalton. He was cutting.
Like,
no, this is terrifying.
Oh, no. So I'm thinking, like, Andy, one is going to be a pick six. So if you watch it, I'm taking my angle this way so I could – like,
oh, you're ready
tackle.
To chase it down.
Yeah,
you
because
were
I thought
positioning.
I thought
no
he
faith
saw,
in Dalton, man.
Well, I didn't know Andy was gonna go up top on him. Like, Bleedy's a pretty athletic dude. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh man, like he got this, because it was I just lofted it. I didn't like beam it because I wanted him to be able to catch it.
Yeah, because
so I'm like, all right, well, I'm
quarterback. If you catch him, you go back.
Right. Go up and get it.
You're the only quarterback who catches. You can't catch the ball. And it's Andy.
We're being
nothing against Andy, but Andy is an underrated athlete, honestly. Like, so he went up in there and got it, because I literally took that touchdown saving angle and I said, oh. And
I love that.
Yeah.
That was an 18-yard touchdown pass. You thought that was going to get be a pick six. You were ready to chase it down. Touchdown pass, Mohamed Sanu. Tampa Bay, what do you remember? This was an easy one.
Oh, A.J. ran the wrong route one.
A.J. Green ran the wrong route.
Well, I don't think he got the call there, like, because it was a can. It was a pass run can. I don't think he got the can to the pass, because we got the look for the pass. So he, if you watch it, he's just jogging up the sideline. But meanwhile, like, Andy threw me the ball, and there's a D lineman coming running in my face. I'm like, I'm not gonna get killed, so you're still open. So I just beamed it across the field, like, and he still catches it and goes out of bounds. And you if you watch the game or whatever, you'll see him just like, I don't know, like I didn't get the call. But it was supposed to be that same pass
right.
through the Geo.
Right.
Okay. It was that play. He was supposed to clear it.
So you're
it
just
out.
Getting rid of it.
Yeah, I'm just getting rid of it.
People like, should know by now that if you have the ball in your hands and you're behind the line of scrimmage, you're throwing it.
Oh,
that one's on AJ.
Or like, there was this time I took a sack because I'm not throwing it.
Yeah, you got to worry right. about your rating at this
exactly,
point.
Exactly.
Word has gone out that right. you have this immaculate QB right. rating
so
at this
like,
point.
I was like, hey, man, I'll take this sack. We'll be all right.
I love that he's taking sacks. Because he's got his rating to worry about.
Wait, what were you for the career when you took the sack? Like,
I was like 5 for 5.
There's only an incompletion here. Do you remember? You only have one incompletion.
Yeah, I remember it was to Julio. It was Cover Zero. I threw it where only he could get it, but he was still hand fighting with Jimmy Smith.
Julio's fault.
I blame him for that. I'm like, Julio. I'm like, bro, you're the fastest dude on the planet. How are you not getting this?
I'm with you.
Like, come on now.
How many times have you replayed that in your mind? Because it's the one incomplete.
A bunch. I mean, it's Julio. Like, if you watch it, I mean, it was Cover Zero. I'm just like, here you go, you got it.
Trust in your
receiver. Did Julio apologize? I mean, has he apologized?
He's like, I'm
throwing a touchdown to Andy Dalton.
The sixth one, do you remember the sixth one? At Tampa Bay, or against Tampa Bay. I don't know if it was at Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I had two against Tampa. It was the one to Julio, and there was one to Matt.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so your last one was to Matt, 5-yard pass to Matt Ryan. What was that one? It's been a while, by the way. You've been a bit of a failure for the last 3 or 4 years.
they haven't asked me to throw the ball the last 3 years.
That means they should, though.
They got the best quarterback in the history of passing.
I mean, I'm just here. I don't play.
Do you go into the quarterback room sometimes and just say, like, hey, I'm here for the meeting, and they're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, highest-rated quarterback in NFL history.
No, I don't do that. When I'm called upon, if I'm called upon. There was certain times in Atlanta I actually had, like, designated, like runs and pass checks. And
they trusted you. They trusted you with the ball. But what was the one to Matt Ryan?
It was an end around. They handed it to Ridley. Ridley pitched it back to me, and Matt ran. And I just flicked it over to him, and he made the catch. He was stumbling. I had to make him stretch out for a little bit.
Do you have a favorite among them?
I would say it would probably be either the pass to Tate or the first one.
You have the 51-yard one to Julio.
That one to Julio, too, was pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. Because it was verse quarters. I was supposed to check it to the run. It wasn't verse Cover Zero. But I was like, man, that is Julio versus safety. Like, I'm going to take a Julio versus safety.
I love that.
I'm like, the best. Every day.
He is so confident about throwing the ball.
But Tate, because you put it right where you had to, right? Uh-huh. Yeah, that was like the best pass you've ever made.
Yeah, I had to run, set up quick, and let it fly. And he made a hell of a catch for sure. But the one to Julio was cool because we did red light, green light after, so it was a pretty cool celebration.
The red light, green light celebration.
Yeah, the group celebration. Yeah, it's almost as memorable as the catch itself. Yeah.
Well, thank you for reliving your glory days with us here as a quarterback. We appreciate your time. Anything else that we need to know? Any mysteries or secrets when the 30 for 30s come out that tell the story that have not been told here?
There's some cool ones. Leave Untold.
Oh, okay.
There's a bunch of, like, ones where it's like I've bet people from the 40-yard line hit the crossbar. Just
really?
Oh yeah.
He didn't leave it untold though.
I mean,
well, because he's a bit of a shark.
I can't let him know that you can hit the crossbar from the 40-yard line.
Oh no, you can't tell everybody.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for the time.
Appreciate you guys.
You'd be the best quarterback in the history of the New York Jets organization.
That would be pretty cool. It was a childhood dream of mine to play quarterback.
Was it?
And receiver, I mean.
It seems like you lived it out for nine.
The great thing about having a perfect quarterback rating is, like, if you stop, no one can take it from you.
Correct.
Like, they're only going to tie you.
I know.
Do you remind people?
So now are you going to be judicious the next time you go up there? You're going to take another sack or something?
You should just go throw it on your resume in Marino's office. Be like, what's up?
No, I wouldn't do that to Dan, man. He's one of the greatest.
Yeah, but you're better than him.
Well, it's amazing. In this building, man, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game.
Just what are the odds?
There's no reason to wish it.
I appreciate y'all, man.
Don Lebatard.
Mustard mixes with mayonnaise better than ketchup does.
What?
Yes.
No.
What you've just said is appalling. What you've just said is an offense to anyone who's ever eaten.
Stugatz.
Ketchup. Oh, my God. Ugh, don't like it on anything, but...
What?
Ketchup? Yeah.
You're un-American!
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
Oh.
Did you call him go?
It's a term of endearment.
Oh. We've been calling each other go for 20 years.
Really?
Me more than him. Me calling him go more than him calling me go.
What are the origins of go?
Do you remember what are the origins of go?
Greek?
I don't know. I probably did something and you're like, oh, and then it just turned into like go. Because I think when usually when that, you were hearing news about me, that was the first like reaction in your head. What did he do?
what did he do now? Let's just start right there with Ricky. I wanted to talk to him about what happened with Salman Rushdie this week through the prism of religion, because you've been searching all over the globe for a closer connection to source, and you've seen religious bigotry, religious extremism, you know, the history of religion. So what is your relationship with religion?
Wow. Wow. What a timely question. So I grew up and my father is still a preacher, a minister. His mother was a minister. And on my mom's side, my grandmothers were ministers. So I grew up in a very religious family. And so religion is part of who I am. And I think, unfortunately, religion is almost, it's a taboo. It's like a bad word right now. And I think people get orthodoxy or orthodox religion confused with the concept of religion. And to me, religion means that we have some kind of belief system that allows us to feel really good about making choices. You know, that there's mean that we feel our lives are meaningful, that there's a belief system and we activate that belief system by the way we live our lives. Okay? To me, that's a universal function that we all need. But because religion is a taboo thing, it's become unconscious. And so people don't know what they believe in. And so they feel disconnected from the world because they don't have a connection between their belief system and what their experience is like in the world.
Have you tried them all on? How many of these religions, because you've been to India and back, you've studied religion. How many of these have you tried on and been like, not for me before, along the path toward what I believe is some enlightenment? I believe you found some enlightenment.
Yeah. So the first religion was Christianity. And I think from the time I was two or three till I remember going to Sunday school until I hit puberty, it was like good stuff. You know, it's like valuable. But as soon as I hit puberty and started to have like hormones and stuff.
Impure thoughts.
Exactly. It didn't make sense as much. And so I went on to the next religion. And after Christianity, I guess the religion was like be rich and famous, be somebody, you know, the cult of personality. And so I did that religion, you know, and I felt like I got to the top of that and I was like, it's not it. It's not it. There has to be more. And then from that point, I didn't go looking for religions as much. I went to look for what is the source of religion. Like, where does it all, like, what is the point? Where does it all come from? Because what I've gotten so far, it ain't working. And that's what led me to India. And I remember being at the bottom of a temple in India, and there's music and dance and all these things going on. And I had the awareness of, like, you know, religion is not something that we find outwards. It's something that we connect to inwards and we test it outwards, right? We have an inner belief system and then we act on that belief system and we see what the world tells us, right? If it's the response we expected or better, okay, that's something to believe in. If it's not the response or worse, maybe that's something to let go and expand your belief system. And I think the positive thing of the death of orthodoxy or orthodox religion is people are free to discover their own religion. But what has to happen first is people have to heal. Oh, that's the big one. People have to heal from the way they've been wounded by orthodox religion so that they can connect consciously to some meaningful path in life or some meaningful worldview or a religion.
You mentioned healing, Ricky, and I don't know if people know how much studying you have done of holistic medicines. There was a while there where I don't know that you were doing. Were you doing Reiki? It wasn't really Reiki. It was much deeper than that. But Reiki, where you were putting your hands on people and studying the healing principles of massage.
Well, it's called craniosacral therapy, is what it's called, and that's actually a pretty good description. And it's so interesting you mention it, because this past weekend I was in Denver taking a craniosacral course. The person I wanted to talk about today astrologically is myself, okay? Because I have some things going on for me astrologically, okay? And you know, the past couple of days I've been feeling kind of out of it. You know, my brain's been kind of foggy, my body's been achy. Okay. And the reason is because this weekend, as I was taking the class, the whole class was based on treating people who have suffered concussions. Right. And the simple way to understand this is the brain. Okay. The brain is like the mainframe of our bodies and really of our minds and our life. Okay. And people that have suffered a lot of trauma, okay, that it limits brain function because it creates things being stuck, all right? Especially if they've never been given the time to heal and recover. And the nature of football is it's bang, bang, bang. There's not really much time to heal or recover. And so the basis of these healing techniques is just to bring attention and awareness and energy and cerebral spinal fluid and blood and lymph energy back into the brain so the tissues can become alive and work themselves out. So the same issues that people are finding with football players and their cognitive decline are matching exactly with what they're finding in dementia and Alzheimer's, right? And it's the simple principle is just bringing blood flow and energy and awareness back into the brain. But so this past weekend, that's what I was doing, right? I was receiving the work and giving the work. And the result is as things start moving, right, all of those stuck places and those stuck traumas, right, they start to release. And so I've been having like flashbacks of specific hits that I took. And it's not only the specific hits that I took, but as a football player, when I was injured, there was a huge emotional component because my self-identity was so tied to it and my livelihood was tied to it. And so, you know, going back into and for me, injuries like really like were, you know, really wreaked havoc on my self-identity. And so part of the healing process is the healing the body, but part of that is also healing the emotional things that are tied into it. Because if the emotions don't resolve, it doesn't allow the body to resolve. And if the body's stuck, it doesn't allow us to contact and release and work with those emotions.
I think a lot of people might say all of this is bullshit, Ricky, but I have done some physical work where the pain is so deep in my ankle or my shoulders that what gets conjured is a bike accident I had 15 years ago, a pitching motion when I was 9 years old that I didn't remember, walking to a car on a broken ankle behind my father, the emotional feeling of my father not believing me that my ankle was broken. All that trauma is stored in the body, right?
Yep. Yeah. And so we've all been through trauma, right? And the brilliant thing about this class is we did a study in 2014, 2015, where we brought 15 retired NFL players to South Florida, and they received this body work for a week. And we did before and after testing. And all of the findings were put together and presented in this class that I took. So it's like a body work protocol that's specifically aimed at people who have suffered a lot of physical trauma. And, you know, so it's, you know, to me, like I'm an advocate for cannabis and I'm a, you know, advocate for astrology. But this weekend really connected me to this advocacy for the body, you know, and the weird thing was it was this weird feeling because part of me was afraid to go back into the trauma because I was afraid I might be stuck. Right? What do I do? There's nothing to do, you know? But I realized as I went into the trauma, as I went there, right, more awareness, more juice came back and things are starting to move more. And so, I said I was a little bit foggy, but I know the fog is going to clear. It's just the old stuff coming back up to be processed so it can actually move. And I think you know, all these different modalities of healing, that's really what it comes down to, is just bringing awareness back into places where we're stuck. You know, the body, the spirit, whatever you want to call it, has an amazing capacity to heal, right? The scientists call it neuroplasticity, okay? But if there's no action or movement or no life somewhere, then the life force can't get there and do its magic. And so the more we can be flexible in our bodies and in our minds and in our feelings, right, it allows things to move and it allows healing to occur.
Do you remember specifically the hits you remember?
Yeah, there's the big one that came up. I have like this like I broke two ribs. We were playing the Rams. This was 2001. Okay. And about this time I was either first or second in the NFC in rushing. Okay. And I think we have four or five games left. And so in the game, I have it's a nice 12 or 18 yard run, and I get speared in the side, and I you know, break a couple of ribs. And I keep trying to play for the next couple of weeks because, you know, I'm trying to get to the Pro Bowl, you know, but I just made it worse, and I wasn't effective because, you know, I had two broken ribs. And so that was like the beginning of the end for me in New Orleans, because I ended up being traded at the end of that season. And I think if I would have stayed healthy through that season, you know, it would have been a different result for my football career. So for that identity, there's still wounds that are stuck in there. And bringing that to consciousness and thinking about it and allowing it to move and release, you know, it feels good. I'm starting to feel like more movement come back into my neck, into my spine, into this area of my rib cage.
When you talk about that, like, do you think back and say, what would have happened if I would have stayed in New Orleans, or you just think that wasn't my path?
Well, I don't do either. I realized that at the moment I had a different consciousness, and that's where the wound happened, and that's where the stuck place is. So it's really just going back and realizing, oh, when I was younger, right, that really hurt my feelings. And that usually dissolves it enough where I don't have to come to some kind of resolution if that was my path or not. It's like when you're young and you think certain things. As you get older, you look back and you're like, oh, I was just young. I didn't know.
Playing with broken ribs sounds like it probably hurts.
Yeah, you know, it was this weird, I have this weird like psychology that almost the more it hurt, the more pain I could withstand and still play, right? That was like...
Same, by the way.
Oh my God. That was something to be proud of.
Yeah. It's so stupid. The nobility of playing with broken ribs in the NFL, it sounds asinine. It sounds. What is the worst pain in football that you've known? Physical pain?
When I dislocated my elbow my rookie year in San Francisco. That was the worst pain I felt.
Has anyone done the work on that elbow that has conjured the memory of that?
No, but I feel it all the time. I feel it all the time. But you know, here's the thing though. Like I said, the body has the ability to recover. So if someone is healthy and they're happy, right, we can receive trauma and the body has the ability to bounce back. But if we're going through emotional things or we're stressed or we're sick or there's other things that are taking the body's resources, then that thing doesn't have the ability to resolve. And so the body says, okay, we're going to tuck this away until there's more resources and you can resolve this. But most of us stay so stressed in life, instead of going back to resolve it, we just put layers and layers and layers on top of it.
So, like, are you actively aware when you have pain, you know what the cause of it is? Or is it possible that, like, you have pain and you just haven't gotten that flashback yet to remind you what it is that's causing it?
Yeah, there's both. But the more work, this more of this work that I do, it almost becomes instant. Like, as soon as I feel something, I can almost feel like if I feel pain in my shoulder, right? I tune into the pain in my shoulder and it takes me right into the back of my head. And then I remember the hit. So, yeah, but it's that's the sensitivity that I've been training for almost 20 years. And the reason I started learning this stuff is because I realized that I was doing so much damage to my body. I needed to find some kind of way to like, at least in my mind, to feel like I can do something to relieve some of the trauma.
So what's like the opposite end then? Like what's the one that you're like, oh, I feel this thing, and then you like, have a flash, and like, oh, that's the time I stubbed my toe because I wasn't wearing shoes outside and I kicked like a curb or something.
You know, there's a hierarchy of like events, and those stubbing toes, because of all the things I've been through as a football player and having my mom as my mom, those the stubbing the toes are so low in the hierarchy that they really don't even register a consciousness.
You really do remember the shit getting get kicked out of you, huh? Like you, you mentioned your mom stuff quite a bit.
Well, so astrologically, okay, my mom is an Aries, okay, and she's got a really strong Mars. So regardless, anyone that's around my mom, okay, when she's having a bad day, it's gonna hurt. And when you're someone's child like that, you know, and you're the male, and you look like your dad, who she doesn't like, then it's probably going to happen a little bit more. But I can appreciate it because it helped me have an appreciation for how to wield my own power in ways that have been beneficial to me.
Do you have any repercussions from concussions that you are aware of?
We all do. All of us do. Except the issue is most of us are not aware of them. You know, it's funny, as like doing body work with people, someone comes in and one of the questions that are in the intake is, have you ever had a concussion or bumped your head? Okay. Every single person that comes in, right? Sometimes they don't know, they don't remember, and then it comes and then there's a whole story around it. Okay. So, and this is what occurred to me, is we've all been through physical trauma. We've all been through emotional trauma. And the idea is, when we go through trauma we can't resolve, the body stores it away until we are ready to resolve it. And so as soon as we take that attitude, we don't have to be afraid of our trauma. We can realize that if we just deal with it, right, we're more mature, we're at a later date, we have the ability to look at it differently. We have the ability to process it that we didn't have back then.
Aaron Rodgers did ayahuasca, talked about it. What is your relationship with plant medicine?
Well, I mean, I'm a cannabis advocate, so... And I think this is wonderful. I mean, I think it's interesting because times have changed, and he's more comfortable talking about his ayahuasca use than I was talking about my cannabis use. So it's nice to see how football players and plant medicine are evolving.
What's on your astrology chart that you found interesting that you are in a period of what right now?
Brain stimulation. So there's a branch of astrology called medical astrology. And in medical astrology, each of the planets rules an organ, and Mercury rules the brain and the nervous system. Okay. And right now Mercury is at 20 degrees Virgo. Okay. My rising sign, my ascendant, is 18 degrees Virgo. So this weekend, while I was taking this class on the brain, okay, I had Mercury, the planet of the brain, going over my ascendant, and the ascendant rules the body. Okay, and so at the same time, I had the planet Uranus. Okay, and we've talked about Uranus here. Uranus is like these flashes of insight, this brilliance. Okay, but it's complicated because it's like you have this brilliant awareness, but it's something that other people probably are not going to understand because it's like it's that brilliant. And so there's this tension of, I have this great idea I'm excited about, but I feel like if I share it with the people I know, they're going to think that I'm crazy. Okay. So that's the kind of tension. But the positive thing is like this flash of brilliance, this insight. And it's in the ninth house in Taurus. And Taurus rules body work, the body. Okay. So this Uranus trining my ascendant, Mercury on my ascendant, this insight that I had about the brain. And this idea of people are going to think I'm crazy if I share it. You know, people are going to think. And synchronistically, I have the opportunity to talk to someone who I feel comfortable enough to share my crazy ideas. So lucky me, I have the opportunity for people to think that I'm crazy.
Did you read at all about the race norming settlement with the NFL where black players, I think it was over 300 of them, now qualify in the settlement for pre-dementia testing and insurance costs. But the NFL basically, by settling, while it's not an admission, is saying, yeah, our testing and our decision-making on what black pain was, it was difficult. It was more difficult to prove black pain to doctors than it was any other kind of pain.
Well, because I think it's so much in our DNA and in our tissue, right? That it's relative, right? It's relative. That we just have learned to live with a certain level of pain that becomes our norm that, you know, people, different people don't experience. But I think it's beautiful that through science or however they figured it out, that they figured it out and they actually are like addressing it. That's cool.
How did you receive all of the concussion stuff when you were a running back that was carrying 400 times a season and it's clearly unhealthy? And then you see play out in front of you either during your career or right after, hey, football players get brain stuff more than the rest of us because of course they do. Look at what they're doing for a living.
Yeah, well, I go where I usually go. How can I be different? I don't think I'd like that. And so I allow my mind to be open to there must be some kind of way that there must be something that can be done about this. And synchronistically, when I was playing in Toronto, I broke my arm and I had an Achilles injury. And my trainer said, hey, I know this friend who's an osteopath, and I think you would really love receiving the work he does. So I went to go see the osteopath, and he started doing craniosacral work with me. And I was like, wow. And he started explaining what it was and how it worked. And I was like, this is exactly what football players need, you know, to deal with all of the concussive hits we deal with. And I became really passionate about it. And I went really deep into the curriculum and really trying to understand the mechanisms and how this works. And then I put together the concussion research program, and the papers that have come out of that are really powerful. So I'm doing my part to heal myself, but also to advocate and get the message out that there is something you can do. And it's not just football players, it's veterans or it's anyone who's been through car accidents or a lot of physical trauma.
Anything else interesting on your chart that you wanted to share with us?
Yeah, so the progressed moon, okay? The progressed moon in astrology, what the moon represents is like what we're sensitized to, what we're sensitive to, okay? Because the moon is about how we nurture and take care of ourselves. And the only way we know what needs nurturing and what needs to be taken care of is if we're sensitive to it, right? Knowing what feels good and what doesn't feel good allows us to take care of ourselves better. So wherever the progressed moon is moving in our chart, it's where we have to learn to be sensitive to and nurture and take care of ourselves, okay? So for me, just in the past month, the progressed moon just moved into the seventh house, okay? The seventh house is the house of relationships and partnership, okay? And so where I tend to be someone who is more like solitary, my progressed moon moves into the seventh, I need to be around people. I need to connect to people more. So I've in order to nurture and take care of myself, I'm being more social. But at the same time, I'm being more sensitive to the people that I spend time around. And with the moon, the whole idea is to get to know who we are on a deeper level. And so if we get around people who we feel like we have to pretend or we have to be someone else, then we don't get that opportunity to grow and nurture ourselves. So like, and I think this is an example. This conversation is more intimate than I've had publicly in probably my whole life. And it's because of the way that I feel about Dan, and I feel safe in this space to share what's really on my heart. And the idea of when we share what's really on our heart, right, it attracts people or it repels people, right? And when you share what's really on your heart, it gives you the ability to attract people that can truly see and appreciate those deeper parts of yourself. If we pretend to be something, then we just attract people who are going to align to what we're pretending to be. And so this is the work that I'm doing right now is opening my heart to other people and seeing who appreciates it, who can grow from it, and who doesn't get it.
See you later, buddy. We will talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Thank you.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.